The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 488. I hope you're doing well out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, we're going to change things up a little bit this week. Typically, whenever there's a big WWE event, for example, SummerSlam happening this weekend, I'm usually joined by the pro wrestling pundits, DJ Joey Blaze and Ringside Rand, to give our thoughts, opinions, predictions, and whatnot as to what may occur at the PLE. However, due to travel and vacation plans, neither one of the pundits is available to give their thoughts, their ideas, etc., etc. So next week, we'll do the recap show, the review show, and we'll see just what the guys thought about the overall matches and the show itself and whatnot. You're not going to be without any wrestling, though, as I definitely have moved up on the schedule. This month's edition of the State of Pro Wrestling for July and August, it is going to be a great show. Gerald Glassford joining me once again to talk about all the news that's worth noting, especially when it comes to some big events that occurred, such as the passing of the immortal Hulk Hogan. We're also going to talk about AEW. We're going to talk about SummerSlam and give our thoughts and predictions on it. So it's going to still be a wrestling episode. It's just going to be tweaked a little bit with a different tag team partner, if you will. So, all right, with that then, ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a very good episode, a little bit of a longer one, so I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Gerald Glassford talking about the state of pro wrestling.
Ding, ding, ding. And we're back with another episode of the State of Pro Wrestling with the PVD Cast, Pop Culture Cosmos. Truly appreciate you joining us, but it wouldn't be a state of pro wrestling without one half the tag team podcasting champions of the world. It is, of course, my good friend, indeed, Mr. John Orlando.
Hey, Gerald, how are you?
All right, I'm doing well, my friend. Just great to be here, We are going to be talking about the WWE heading into SummerSlam, AEW, post All In. I want to hear your thoughts on that. But I think we have to lead everything off with the unfortunate passing of a wrestling icon. I don't think you could say otherwise. It's been all over the place. It will probably be the most covered wrestling death, maybe of our lifetimes. I think even Ric Flair will not get this kind of coverage. It is the passing of Hulk Hogan at the age of 71 due to cardiac arrest following complications from neck surgery earlier this year. I know there was rumors abound as far as his health status, grave condition, friends of his had to go on social media and state otherwise, but this was obviously an unexpected turn. He did have his Hulk Hogan's Real American Amateur Wrestling, or Real American Wrestling, I should say, based off of amateur wrestling, that was going to be scheduled to begin next month. So that's still, I guess, I still is going, but I'm sure that's still the front man is passed away. That's still going to be up in the air. But Hulk Hogan, a wrestling icon, a pro wrestling icon, and a man, you know, again, a very complicated history, as I've said in the description of this show, my friend. I don't think there's any two ways about it. For however good he did for the industry, there are a lot of negative things surrounding Hulk Hogan throughout his life, outside the ring, per se, that have taken place. Said, done, viewed, listened, whatever you want to say in regards to that. But it's going to be something, again, Netflix was in the process of creating a whole biography of Hulk Hogan. I believe they started, according to reports, in 2024. Needless to say, to categorize well the entire life of Hulk Hogan, to weed through what is true, what is not true, what is great and historic, what is controversial and downright appalling at times. It's a mix, but no one can deny the impact that he has had on pro wrestling. And you and I may not even be doing this show today if he and Vince McMahon didn't map out this course so long ago when he won the title from the Iron Sheik in Madison Square Garden in January of 1984.
Well, I think that one thing I would like to just point out, I think that you said he's done a lot. He's probably the most iconic pro wrestler. I think he's iconic in terms of just pop culture.
Because he did transcend pop culture. Yes,
he did. Definitely. I mean, you look at appearances on Saturday Night Live, the A-Team. Yes, his movies were cheesy in that, but they still were part of our pop culture, especially if you were a younger kid.
His first appearance in Rocky III as Thunderlips. Oh,
exactly. Exactly. I kind of forgot about that. I agree with you in that you have to take a look at the good that he did and the bad that he did. And kind of, if you will, earlier this week, we saw it with Malcolm Jamal Warner. I bet Gerald, many times the following day that you may have looked at your phone, you may have seen clips of the Cosby Show, and I did. And I go, God, what a great show. And then I'm like, but it's Bill Cosby. He's such a scumbag. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We have to take a look at it. And I like to take a look at it this way. Hulk Hogan, the wrestler, versus Hulk Hogan, the human being. I think he's very problematic and very troublesome. When you look at him as just a human being. But, you know, as I said, he was the hero for all of us. The character of Hulk Hogan was a hero to all. And I'd like to just real quickly put this out there. And I've said this, I believe, probably on your show before. I never was a big Hogan fan as a kid.
You were never a Hulkamaniac. Neither was I. I mean, I think the best run for me, for him, that appealed to me most was when he smartly invested and turned heel after his Hulkamania run in WCW started to wane, and jumping on with the NWO. But again, even there was a tolerance limit there. But yeah, you and I were never Hulkamanias. We were never eating our vitamins and saying our prayers with hope at that period of time during the 80s, I don't think.
But I give the man credit, because I vividly remember the two times when I was a kid that I got to go see the WWF at the time live. First time was in 1988. And I was like, okay, so Hogan's going to take on Kamala. Big deal.
But when I was part of that as well, my friend. I watched it at the LA Sports Arena. Him and Kamala, that was a huge around-the-country arena showcase for those guys. And, yeah, I was kind of rooting for Kamala. I won't say that.
I tried to, Jared. I tried to root for Kamala, but you hear the music. You see the energy. the charisma. He's got the total package. It was even more solidified just how good Hogan was character-wise when fast forward to 1991 and they're doing the circuit of Hogan Flair. And I'm like, I'm going. I'm a teenager. I'm like 16 years old. I'm going. And I'm going to go and I'm going to cheer for Flair because he's the real world champion. Same thing happened. You hear that music, you can't help but cheer. You can't help but get out of your seat and applaud that Hulk Hogan is coming to the ring because, again, the presentation, the package, the music, wow, the charisma, it's all there. And you, I would just say that if anybody would say that, that Hogan didn't make an impact in the world of wrestling, they're just plain dumb. I'm just going to say
yeah,
that. Liking or disliking,
yeah,
you can't deny it.
You can't. You can't. I apologize for interrupting, but yeah, it's absolutely undeniable the mark he made on this industry, and the rise of Hulkamania is the rise of professional wrestling into the larger zeitgeist, as it were, to use what my good friend TJ Johnson just said, what in regards to Fantastic Four, it put it in the realm of a larger zeitgeist of what we saw as professional wrestling. You and I, especially, you know, me, a little bit older, I did and was watching and enjoying pro wrestling before, a little bit before Hulkamania, just before Hulkamania started. I was really getting into professional wrestling. And the Hulkamania event, I was rooting for the bad guys against Hulkamania, but I understood and respected what Hulkamania was and what it did for the industry and bringing it to a larger vantage point. Obviously, I was tuned to the TV to watch the pay-per-view of Hogan and Andre at WrestleMania 3 in Detroit. I was tuned to see each and every time out as far as if or not the heels would eventually finally overcome Hulk Hogan and stop his run. But no one can deny whether you liked him or disliked his character and the fact, okay, yes, he had the same routine each and every time, but most of these wrestlers did. When you're working 350 days a year, in some cases, or 300 days a year, you have to go ahead and make sure you save your body. And in order to do so, a lot of times you have to do, you know, same thing time and time again. I truly didn't understand it as much then as I do now, but seeing how that's the case, you have to respect him for being out there so many times, so many places, so many parts of the world, all over, in doing what he needed to do to get things done as far as his character over and his company over in the process as well.
I just sometimes think and just wonder, you know, what if that hadn't happened? What if Hulkamania never happened? Who would have been the next person that could have been plugged in? And you think of Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Yeah, he was good, but
Dusty Rhodes was thought of. But Dusty Rhodes.
Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah.
But they're all great wrestlers, but they don't have that it factor.
Yes.
That's the thing. They don't have that it factor. And
Place, right time, right person was Hulkamania.
And he shook the foundation of professional wrestling in 96 when he turned to Hollywood Hogan and joined the NWO. My stepfather, not a wrestling fan at all, but he came to me because I had shouted, "Oh my God." And he came into the den and said, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Hulk Hogan turned bad." And he was flabbergasted because he knew of Hulk Hogan. Because everybody knows Hulk Hogan, you know, whether you're a fan or not. And so it made a big impact on him, a non-fan who was just as taken aback as I was with that revelation that Hogan was the third man. Absolutely. And by the way, George, thanks for checking out the show. Appreciate it. Sorry.
No worries. All good. He wanted to know, make sure all is well. And as we're talking here, it is the state of pro wrestling. It is John Orlando along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. Truly appreciate you doing so. We're covering the major news story, which is Hulk Hogan, an icon in the professional wrestling industry, a guy who you have to give a lot of credit to for building the foundation along with Vince McMahon, helping to map this out. And both deserve a lot of credit from Vince McMahon being the puppet master behind the scenes, directing all this as far as the direction for the WWF at that point in time. And then the actual showcase itself for Hulk Hogan, again, being that guy that so many millions of people believed in and loved and cherished. And again, I don't want to dissuade anybody from that, because there's so many childhoods out there that truly loved and appreciated Hulk Hogan for what it was. And then, like you said, once he went over, his career started to wane in WWE, WWF. He had started to wane. He smartly moved away from that, got into a little bit of, tried to get more into his acting as far as doing Thunder in Paradise and other things. Got the deal from WCW, took advantage of that, became a hero once again. That started to wane real quickly, and was so smart in evaluating the situation in helping launch the NWO into what it was. Again, it had already started with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash as the outsiders, but him understanding that he was starting to wane as a face, and decided stepping into the heel. It has to be considered one of the best heel turns of all time, but because of what it produced, it exploded the NWO. It created a situation where WCW was on top of the world for 83 weeks, as Eric Bischoff will always tell you. You know, it's something where, again, you cannot deny the imprint that this man had on the industry. But again, outside of the ring, so many problems, starting with the steroid trial and how that was dealt with, the stuff behind the scenes, the stuff with Bubba the Love Sponge, if I can say that right, as far as Bubba the Love Sponge, and all that situation with the tape, the infamous tape, not only the visuals, but the audio and things that were said. It's a complicated history, John. Mm-hmm. It's a complicated history to be. George has said, I thought for sure Vince would go before Hogan. I'm sure all WWE tonight will have a huge special on SmackDown as we're recording this. TMZ has reported several of individuals from the past are going to be joining that SmackDown. And I'm sure we'll see this by the time this airs for our audio listeners. They're planning, I'm assuming, something big for SmackDown tonight. But John, going back into the complicated history of Hulk Hogan, especially in his later years, not only the fact that the offensive things that he said and did at periods of time in his life, but also as well the fact that, just having interviews with him, the exaggerated stories and things that were not truthful. Almost every wrestler that you see does this. I think you being closer to the business than I have mm-hmm. heard the tall tales sometimes. And sometimes it has you saying, okay. So it's not just him. It's just not okay. And, every wrestler says that, that they've had every show they did had sellouts and they were all 5-star matches and all that. But again, with someone as iconic and someone as interviewed as much as Hulk Hogan, sometimes it's difficult to weed out what is the fact and what was the fiction with the life of Hulk Hogan.
Well, and I probably would say that I connect that tall tales part of his career to the fact that let's be honest, and I'm not making excuses for him, but he got off the road and then his life just seemed to fall apart because he did the reality show, which some people have said in interviews that, Linda didn't want to do the reality show. She didn't want the kids involved in it, but he went ahead and did it because you're in that spotlight. You're in that realm of fame that you feel like you have to keep up with it. That, I think that in his mind, it was like, hey, if I tell whatever, I was the bassist for Metallica. I think that was one of his last ones, wasn't it? The tall tale where, it's not even possible because the years don't even match up. But that gets people talking, and that gets people say, oh yeah. And then, you know, oh, remember when Hogan did this and did that in the ring? I think that that was part of it. I don't think that it was by accident that he would say these tall tales. I truly don't believe that. But I think it was in his mind a way to stay in the public's interest. And if I may, real quickly, I just would like to throw out there, you mentioned Vince McMahon and you mentioned Hulk Hogan creating what wrestling has become.
And when WrestleMania and then evolving into the WrestleManias going forward. Absolutely, my friend.
Well, I think we also should give credit to the Iron Sheik, because just go with me. We needed a strong heel for Hogan. That wouldn't have worked with any other heel, I don't think. You had to have a strong heel, and the Iron Sheik went ahead and stepped into that role, as very few wrestlers probably in that era would have done, because you're going to be a transitional champion. And that is something that wrestlers did not want back in those times, because they wanted to get on top and stay on top, so to speak. So got to give credit to Iron Sheik for being a team player. You know, granted, he had a run with the tag team titles a little bit after that. But, you know, if it wasn't for the Iron Sheik, then I'm not so sure that Hogan's title win is a big of a deal as it was.
Because it was a transition from Bob Backlund losing on that, as far as the with the thrown in towel, correct? If I'm not mistaken, or by Arnold Skolin. But remember, this was an area. This had not gone. The WWF had not gone national as of yet. It was still based primarily out of Madison Square Garden for their big shows, and this was all mainly done via their main shows in Madison Square Garden, which was so important to them. In fact, Madison Square Garden has a big tribute as we speak that they have displayed for Hulk Hogan outside of MSG at this point in time. And again, it's just goes, we will not see a dedication / interest in a wrestler's death, probably in our lifetimes more than this. Even I don't want to say, maybe the comparable is Chris Benoit, because for the tragic reasons, obviously. But I don't think Ric Flair's death, whenever that happens, he is going to quite live up to this, because his life outside of the ring wasn't quite, although he's tried hard, as mercurial as Hulk Hogan's per se. But again, no one can discount the legacy that he has. Again, whether you disagree or agree or love or hate Hulk Hogan, you cannot deny the fact that he has become a household name. His work over the course of his career since he gained that title, he easily could have just been another WWF champion. But he found a way to connect with a larger audience through his various dealings with pop culture, talk shows, interviews. He easily blended himself with household names to become a household name, which was something other wrestling champions never did. They never went and did the things, as far as on a public relations standpoint, to get themselves over to the extent Hulk Hogan did. And in doing so, he elevated the industry and himself to a platform which he benefited from for decades. And we, as a, you know, followers, and then also the industry itself, have benefited from ever since.
And you know what? I'm since we're talking about throwing out credit again, I'm going to throw out some credit to Vern Gagne in the AWA, because if you start watching some of that early Hulk Hogan from 81, 82, 83 in the AWA, you could see where he's, I'm going to use the term practicing his character and getting down, you know, the right thing to say to the crowd, the right thing to say on the interviews. So, you know, I think as some people may just be a passive fan and go, oh, Hogan just dropped out of the sky in 84 and they put the title on him. No, he was paying his dues. He was doing what he had to do to be that superstar, so that when the opportunity came, it was like lightning in a bottle. Boom. Off he ran.
his early days in Florida, Memphis territory, his first run in WWF / WWE. You know, he actually had the first meeting. Well, no, it wasn't their first meeting, I don't believe, but his first meeting with Andre on a big platform at Shea Stadium. And then he transitioned to the AWA, actually worked on Rocky III while he was working with AWA. And I'm going to credit Vern Gagne too for helping that character, you know, get a platform where it was on a regional basis doing very well. But I'm also going to give Vern Gagne credit for not giving him the title and giving Hulk Hogan the impetus to want to go somewhere else. Because if he does give Hulk Hogan the title, because Hulk Hogan had title opportunities against Nick Bockwinkel, but it was always the messed up finish, the screw job finish, and as far as it's concerned, if it wasn't for that and he kept on doing it and didn't give him the title, had he given the title, things might be entirely different. We might be talking about the AWA in a much better light and the WWE in past tense at this point in time. It could have been that simple as just that.
You know what? And I know just when you were talking about that, I know there's some people out there say, so what? What if Hogan doesn't get the belt till 86? Look, that's 2 years. Lots happened in the world of professional wrestling in 2 years.
Yeah, because that Rock and Wrestling connection, that you cannot underestimate how important that was connecting to the world of pop culture. There's just so many things. The timing was perfect for exactly what it was, and the mistakes were made by some in evaluating Hulk Hogan, and the benefits of some evaluating Hulk Hogan and what he could do if he was given a title run at that specific time were paramount to what we see today.
Yep, agreed.
Absolutely. But no one can deny the imprint that Hulk Hogan had on this industry. It's just so tough. It's tough to tell. You're just seeing it all over social media, my friend. If you don't say one without the other, you get cursed by one without the other. From whatever side of the spectrum that you're on, it's like you have to dance carefully through a minefield on how you approach this, how to give a person a proper respect for what they did to the professional wrestling industry. But outside of it, you do have to admire the way he controlled the narrative on his character for the most part for many years. It's a situation where if you and I were in that realm and we had achieved that level of success, we would want the same thing. But ultimately, sometimes when you have that level of success, you unfortunately fall victim to some of its pratfalls, and I believe it did. But again, a lot of it is of his own making, and in doing so, just, I don't want to say tarnished. I don't know what the word I would really use to describe Hulk Hogan as far as his career legacy. Would you use tarnished? Would you go that far? Would you go damaged? Would you go? I don't know. It's just complicated to go ahead and describe it in detail.
That's what I was going to say. If I had to wrap it up in a single word, I'd say complicated. And, and look, I don't want to be morbid, but I don't think I agree with you, Gerald. We're not going to see another death in wrestling that's going to evoke as much emotion.
Until so polarizing.
But until we get to like John Cena and The Rock and Austin, like when they pass on, and we probably will not be around when that happens because they're a little bit younger than us. I think that's that right there is a barometer of how impactful this death is, because we're going to be decades before we ever get to the Cenas and the Rock and et cetera, et cetera. So of course, again, not wishing ill on anyone, but.
Not wishing ill on anyone. I understand that. I get that. But what I wanted to say is on top of that is no death in wrestling will be as polarizing as this one with Hulk Hogan.
So, I agree.
Yeah. It's just, if I could say, though, ask one last question to you. What is your favorite match with Hulk Hogan?
I'm going to go with, wow, you got me on, you got me on the spot there.
That's my job.
Okay, I'll go with this one because I believe Saturday night's main event, the genius Lanny Poffo versus Hulk Hogan.
I would love to say Hulk Hogan in Japan with the great Muda because Hulk Hogan in Japan is different from Hulk Hogan almost everywhere else. Hulk Hogan in Japan was a much harder working individual. He knew he had to go ahead and do a lot more in the ring than go through the motions like at times he did. And again, I don't discredit him for that because when you're wrestling 300 plus days a year, you have to save your body at certain point of times. And if you follow a routine that really helps your body out, then more power to him. And obviously it led to a long career for him and many years as a champion. But when he performed in Japan, he really had to tune it up. And I'd say the great Muta versus Hulk Hogan. I'd put that right there. Andre versus Hogan at the Silver Dome in Detroit. I would have to also put up there as well, just for the historical factor. And I just think that I watched it in awe of the spectacle more so than the actual professional wrestling match, but the spectacle of it was just absolutely awe-inspiring to be in that large of a crowd, in that large of vicinity. I had never seen that large of a crowd, in response to anything in pro wrestling at that point in time. I don't think I'd seen the parade of champions that large or anything like that. North Korea, that hadn't happened yet. So just seeing it that large venue taking place and just the lights and the camera flashing, and that was just an amazing moment in professional wrestling history. But I'd say great Muta versus Hogan, because again, he had to turn it up when he was in Japan.
You know what? I'll go with Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan since
we're that was a about... really that's an underrated match. I think that was a really good match between those two,
and a spectacle that you tuned in for, because here's two baby faces. And that never happened in the WWF, especially in the 80s. And you had two baby faces battling it out in the center of the ring. So I'm gonna go with that one. And then my number two would be against the Genius.
There you go. Absolutely. But the Hulk Hogan actually had to he had to lead Warrior through in that match. And that's maybe why the match was so good, because Hulk Hogan usually just let the heels lead him through a match, but this was different. This is the exact opposite. So maybe that's why that match in Toronto was so good between the Warrior and Hogan. Absolutely. A very underrated match indeed. But yeah, what are your thoughts out there on the legacy of Hulk Hogan? We want to know from you what your thoughts are. How, was it as far as his passing? How did you take it? What are your memories of him? Are they fun? Were you a Hulkamaniac back in the day? Did you take your vitamins and say your prayers? Please let us know as we try to remember respectfully yet understand the complicated legacy of Hulk Hogan. Please let us know your thoughts at popculturecosmos@yahoo.com or at the PBDcast, wherever your social media happens. But one half hour down, one half hour to go here on the State of Pro Wrestling. It is John Orlando, my tag team partner. Tagging him back in, it is Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching this thing. We're bringing our opponent over to the ropes so we can behind the ref's back, choke him out with the tag rope. There you go. No, tag rope, I like that better,
Oh, okay, the tag rope.
Then,
okay.
Then you get the elbow working to make it look like you're really trying to dig it in there. Yeah.
And then I can go, ref, pulled my hat. He pulled my hat. Yes. You're going to let that slide. He pulled my hat.
The one thing I've always wanted to see someone do, if that they're flexible, is argue with the ref, but be stretched out with their leg and their foot leaning against the guy's throat in the corner. So they're actually arguing with the ref while they're still choking out someone behind their back at the same time. I think that's a creative spot. I've always wanted to see someone do it, but I've never had. But it's just leaving that out there for people. But it is John Orlando along with me, Joe Glassford. You know, that tells you all you need to know about what we think about professional wrestling when we're trying to map all this stuff out. Man, you could call us marks, I guess, if that's the case. But it is, of course, John Orlando along with me, Joe Glassford. Thanks again for watching, listening. Before we get back, we'll go ahead and touch on the WWE here in a little bit. But I want to go ahead and touch on AEW, leaning away into what they just did coming out of All In, the 50-hour spectacle that it was. No, I'm just kidding. It was 8 hours. But first question I have to you, we've talked about this before when you and I first started having conversations, was about long pay-per-views, and you would describe to me how long these pay-per-views were to you. And I used at some point in time the meme of just a skeleton sitting on the couch, because at one point in time that was a person before the pay-per-view started. But all kidding aside, you know, I thought the industry was trending away from these extra long pay-per-views. I thought WWE, by going to these dual day, you know, 2 day showcases, that they were making a smart move by doing that. But AEW seems to really want to get, and I understand you want to get everybody a payday, because I'm assuming, because the fact that it did sell to almost 30,000 people in Arlington Stadium in Texas, that, you know, it wasn't not going to be a nice payday, and you want to get everybody involved, and because it's your biggest show, you want to get, as Tony Khan, want to get everybody involved. I get that. I understand that. But 8 hours. I mean, I guess you can't say that the customer isn't getting their value out of it from a sheer wrestling content standpoint. But, man, 8 hours is a hell of a long time. 2-hour pre-show and 6-hour pay-per-view.
I had a buddy that got the pay-per-view, and he goes, well, it was awesome because it started at 3 in the afternoon. And it was over by 9. That's still almost 8 hours, dude.
He didn't watch the 2-hour pre-show.
Yeah. I was like, so, well, that is awesome. That's still sitting on your couch for an awful long time. And again, it all boils down to the fact that when Tony Khan sits down to book these pay-per-views, he can't say no. He can't say no to... Tony Storm and Mercedes Moné, you have 12 minutes, all right, including entrance. You know, he can't do that. Every match has to be a 25-minute epic encounter that really doesn't. I mean, I'm sorry. I don't see the point in a Hechicero match going 25 minutes. Sorry, I just don't. So, I mean, until they fix that, we're going to be stuck with these AEW marathons from now on, I think. Especially when it comes to the bigger events.
Well, and that's a shame, because if you are to space it out correctly, you should leave only one, maybe max two matches for over a 20-minute time period, just to make them seem more special and more involved. Rest keep in the teens or 8 or 9 minutes, you know, something like that. You know, that's, or 12, 15 minutes. Just make sure you have two matches at different points of time in the card, or one match at one in different point in time of the card as your main event or what have you, to run that long if you so choose to, if it dictates it. So I agree with you on that. It just makes for maybe you know, a fatigued audience, which that's what you don't want for your final match of the evening or your main event. You want them at their peak. You want to build towards that crescendo of your audience getting more and more excited with each and every match. And then finally, it leads into that. And it's just so hard. It makes it much harder to do that. They were still excited for Adam Page and Jon Moxley. They were excited for the championship win for Adam Page. I get that. I understand that. But still, it's just sometimes... we're going back to the ways that you and I discussed early on, as far as, you know, what things we do not like as far as trends at that point in time. And the trend was like, maximize it as best as possible, which again is a great value for the dollar. I get that. I understand that. 6 hours is great for the dollar, but does it really put your best foot forward? Does it give you the best presentation of your product? Does it become a little bit oversaturated by that time? It's a balance. It's a balance between providing the best product and providing the best value for the consumer while still taking care of your wrestlers.
Saturday Night's Main Event has done a fantastic job of keeping matches to a good, solid time frame. I mean, I don't know who's behind that, but they need to maybe...
It's still the best show in wrestling, in my opinion.
I agree with you on that. Like I said, whoever's coming up with the times, whoever's booking these Saturday Night Main Events, maybe they can give a few tips to Tony, because, yeah, I don't understand... Because it just gets tiring, and they're especially those first matches that are not important. And I'm sorry that I don't find the importance in some of the undercard matches that they have on AEW. What's the point? But they're going to keep on doing it because they're having success. But the success is limited because of that time limit, because your average, ordinary casual fan doesn't want to sit through 6 hours of wrestling. They want a nice little, not even maybe 2 hour, maybe like an hour or 90 minute program, and boom, they're off and running. You know, yeah. They're off and done. They've watched and seen what they wanted to see. They don't have to sit through all these other dreadful matches just to see if they like the product. I don't know. They're doing themselves a disservice.
So coming out of All In, what do you think about the decisions that were made? Having Toni Storm remain as the champion with her victory over Mercedes Moné. You have Adam Page getting the AEW title over Jon Moxley. And then you had MJF winning the Casino Gauntlet. So now he has an anytime, anywhere stipulation as far as a contract is concerned. The Young Bucks lost their executive vice president titles on air with their loss to Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay, who is now taking some time off to heal up his neck injury, trying to make it back for Forbidden Door in London. Your thoughts on all of this? Again, did they move as a company in the right direction despite the time length? Did this company, AEW, move in a right direction in your opinion after the events of All In?
No. Because of what they did this past Wednesday. Gerald, we're doing Adam Page against Jon Moxley again. Like, shouldn't that? You just went through an absolute war where you used a bed of nails and barbed wire and tables, and you went through an entire war. You won the title was won by Page. So that's it. That should be it. In traditional wrestling booking, that's it. That was the blow off. We're done. We're moving Adam Page on to feud with Strickland or whoever. And Jon Moxley and the Death Riders are going to go and feud with somebody else. All right. Ideally, I wish that they would just take a little vacation, but that's neither here nor there. I don't think they've done anything. The whole Hurt Syndicate now has like beef with MJF. We saw that coming from a mile away. That's really not a storyline that I really care about.
I would have never paired them up together. Hurt Syndicate strong. Keep MJF strong on your end. Those are the three best assets this company has, is the Hurt Syndicate and MJF. I have no idea why that they're doing what they're doing in regards to that. Those three guys should be put at the platform right now. They should be at the top and most important levels of your booking at this point in time, in my opinion.
Well, instead, we get Adam Copeland teaming with the Hurt Syndicate against FTR and Hathaway, which that makes no sense, because you just had the Hurt Syndicate, Bobby Lashley, if I remember correctly, chewing out MJF in the back, and now they're teaming with Cope, and it's, again, a convoluted mess. I feel bad that Ospreay's injured because
what happened to him and Christian? I thought they were making up and then doing a tag team run to finish out their careers. I thought that was the case from All In.
Oh, yeah, because I forgot about the let's take 8 minutes so I can get all my stuff in before I make it to the ring. And you guys Just wait. Just hold. Just hold
doing my running. Exactly. You noticed that too. Doing the run-in, and he's like doing his normal entrance and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, isn't this supposed to be a run-in? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm waiting. Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe that either. I'm glad you. I remember being mad when I saw that. And yes, you just reminded me of my anger at that time. Yes.
So I'm sorry to say it, AEW fans. Wait, you asked me about Toni Storm. Keeping the title on Toni Storm, that's the way to go. Toni Storm is a bright spot on the roster of AEW. I really still like her timeless gimmick. I think it's great. You just don't have many options. That's true.
Mercedes Moné is very well paid, very well compensated. She's got a lot of belts, but, you know, at a higher platform like AEW, she just isn't produced as well. Her flaws as far as her production as father, either in the ring or on the mic, they seem to stick out a little bit more than what was done in WWE, because WWE, you thought she was one of the top individual ladies out there without question. But I think it's part of the presentation. I think the people behind the scenes that are packaged her in a better way with her and Bailey, but how it was presented, how it was done, who's doing the most of the talking, who's not, how it's being presented, as far as the level of opponents and things of that nature was done much better than the way Mercedes Moné has been presented in AEW. Because again, they're giving her a lot of leeway and a lot of creative control, and maybe that's not the best thing for her. I agree with you. Toni Storm, by default, is the best thing they've got in the women's division right now.
Yeah, because my other favorite, Jamie Hayter, I don't know what she's up to. She's sometimes on Dynamite, sometimes on Collision, not on for weeks on end. She shows back up. I forget she's on the roster. It's ridiculous. Again, AEW fans, I'm sorry. I wish that I could be honest with you and say that it was a great all these ideas, all these new storylines, all of this is great, but it's not. It's again, just continuing to show that whoever's booking this stuff, whoever's in charge, doesn't really have a handle on what they're doing. Sorry.
Absolutely. We will see what happens with AEW. I'd like to see them go in a little bit different directions, but they have a lot of momentum coming out of AEW. All In, you have to credit for that. That's the largest U.S. audience that I believe they've ever had. Mind you, it wasn't the levels of the last two All Ins in London, but still getting 30,000 in this day's and age, and not being a WWE, you have to give them credit for that. As far as almost 30,000 paid in a stadium, which is something really outside the WWE, no one else could do, because we talked TNA, which just got its record for attendance in the US, and that was at 7,500, 7,600. This was 30,000. So you have to credit All In for at least being a viable alternative for wrestlers out there in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah, I do. Look, I definitely will give their flowers to AEW for 30,000 is nothing to sneeze at. Absolutely not. But at what point is 30,000 no longer good enough? And anything you do, you should want to try to get better at it. I would think, if you play pickleball, you want to get better at it. If you are booking wrestling shows, you want to get better at it. And I'm not sure that improvement is coming anytime soon.
But my friend, before we head on out, the WWE is heading on its way to SummerSlam. It's so funny because I thought about it the other day before Hulk Hogan's passing and anything like that, about Vince McMahon, his affinity to not want to call anything pro wrestling or pro wrestling or anything like that. But yet a lot of his names of his shows, his major shows that he named, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, have its basis in wrestling. So, it's kind of a little bit of an oxymoron there. Just something I pointed out the other day. I was like driving and thought about that. Again, I'm a wrestling mark. What are you going to do? I will say this, though. The WWE is heading into SummerSlam. It was kind of a little bit slow, a little bit dry, coming off the heels of WrestleMania over the course of the summer months. But that, again, is every single year almost in WWE history. It's so hard for them to maintain that momentum coming off of WrestleMania. It dies down, which it probably will for All In. It will die down at some point in time because it's just so hard to keep it at a sustained high level of intensity and interest for the general audience going forward. And leading into SummerSlam, business seems to pick up back up a little bit, which is good because you have a main event of Cody Rhodes and John Cena. People are thinking that Cody Rhodes, who's made comments to that effect as far as possibly turning heel himself, is this going to be a double turn of a Bret Hart, Steve Austin type level that we could be seeing? What are your thoughts about SummerSlam as it heads for two nights on the East Coast, my friend?
Well, first, I would like to say that I do feel bad about the injury to Seth Rollins. I feel like...
is it an injury, though?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I have to confess that when it first happened and I'm watching Saturday Night's Main Event, I'm like, this is a work. This is the old Bret Hart, I injured my knee, let the referee get the baby face back, and then I'm going to come out and attack him. I don't know, but, you know.
But then he took the BFT and took the loss. Right. On a Saturday Night's Main Event.
So you don't know what's going on with that. I'm going to say that maybe in my mind, that it's a real deal, that it's maybe they're playing it up like it's more serious than it actually is. So he can make a comeback, you know, in a couple of months, but that's got to kind of, that kind of stinks. You know, looking at the card, I got to say it looks like very interesting card. I'm not a big fan of the Lyra Valkyrie and Becky Lynch storyline. I just think it's really, again, I think we've talked about it where Becky Lynch should be the babyface. Like, stop trying to make her a heel because she's just not very good at it. And this Lyra Valkyrie, I don't know if they know what to do with her because she seems to be like healing a lot in some of her matches, especially that three-way matchup at the Evolution pay-per-view. But sometimes she's a babyface the way she wrestles.
She doesn't have enough charisma yet. She hasn't developed enough charisma. She's just, again, the wings, that gimmick, I can't deal with it. I understand Valkyrie, all that. But yeah, the wings, it looks goofy. And, you know, can we just give her just a good persona on the mic? Again, I think it's still, she needed another year of seasoning as far as developing her character. Personally, I would have said that if I was watching her and evaluating her, I said maybe another year at NXT before you bring her up, just so that she could find more of a connection with the larger base of fans. But you're right. I'm not sure like this, but I think it's a bigger argument for the legacy characters, which unfortunately we're now old enough to the point where Charlotte Flair, Asuka, and Becky Lynch are now, and Bayley are now those legacy characters because they're not the individuals that the company wants to put at the top anymore, seemingly. That could all change due to injury or circumstance. But it seems like they will have different plans for younger wrestlers or different wrestlers at this point in time. I know that Rhea Ripley and Io Sky, I want to give a big shout out to those two because they've been killing it, absolutely killing it, and provided some of the best women's matches. With all apologies to Mercedes Moné and Toni Storm, who had a really good match at All In. Io Sky and Rhea Ripley, one-upped you on that. Just have to take it on that because it was, to me, one of the best women's matches. That and WrestleMania, the Evolution match and WrestleMania were some of the best women's matches I've seen in quite some time. And seeing that that's the case, I'm just interested to see how they're positioning these wrestlers going forward, at least for now. But Again, John Cena, Cody Rhodes, seeing how that dynamic works out. Gunther and CM Punk. I think at this point you would give I would give the title to CM Punk and see what he does with a run with it. Sorry, all apologies to Gunther. You're big and badass enough to be able to get that title or a title at any point in time the company so chooses, because I don't think you lose your aura by losing. But your thoughts a little bit more on the SummerSlam card before we head on out.
Yeah, I hope they don't do a double turn with Cody and John, because I feel like...
kind of leaning towards it.
I know, but I don't want it because, again, when you're talking about the casual fans, I think those double turns confuse them. That's not me insulting the crowd. I'm just being honest. I think it's confusing as to what's going on. And I would like to see John Cena have something more special. If we're going to turn him back babyface for the last part of the year, do something like, you need somebody like, again, like Hogan. You need a big monster to defeat. And I feel like John Cena needs a big monster again. Like, I don't know how you do that. I hope there's not a double turn. I will say that I think that Cena holds on to his title. I agree with you with Punk and Gunther. I think that the window is closing for Punk.
Yes.
I think that he...
I think you should have gotten it after that Hell in the Cell with Drew McIntyre. I really liked the way mm-hmm. that storyline played itself out. I really thought he was hot at that point in time. But again, that's the problem. You got to strike while the iron's hot. And WWE, as you and I both know, over the course of years, doesn't strike always when the iron is hot.
Yeah, so I think that matchup, I would like to see Punk win. The one that I think is the most interesting, and it got a lot of disagreement and a lot of chatter on social media, is Randy Orton and Jelly Roll versus Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre. And people were right. And then look, I'm not a big fan of Jelly Roll and his music and all that jazz. Okay, that's fine. But folks, this is what the WWE's done for years. I mean, Liberace and Muhammad Ali at WrestleMania 1.
Cyndi Lauper
and Dave Wolf and the score to settle it all.
They've always associated themselves with celebrities, whether it's been to their advantage or not. Again, I'm glad that I haven't seen any Travis Scott in my WWE for quite a while, because that was very irritating. But I will say that again, yeah, it's as much as it makes me cringe to see this aspect, because Paul is good in the ring. You know, if he'd ever thought about pursuing it at a full-time basis, he could be at an elite level as far as athletically and as far as being able to performance-wise. I think that's something where he has that sheer athletic ability that very few individuals at his size has. So again, we'll see what happens, but you have to have something that will bring in a more casual audience, and Jelly Roll and Paul, Logan Paul will do it.
Again, take notes, Tony Khan. I don't understand why
the Costco guys.
Not like
on the pre-show. On the pre-show, no less. Yes.
Yeah, like you can't have Tony Khan. You can't have the offensive line of the Jacksonville Jaguars, the team you own, be at ringside. Why? What? You know? I mean, I know that the Jags, but I mean, come on. Still,
it's very interesting the way these two map themselves out. Again, it was also interesting to see as far as the ratings, as far as the first 6 months, because Netflix put out a report on how they're doing. Over 250 million views, I think, since they've come on the air as far as on Netflix is concerned. Netflix is saying all the right things and they're very happy, but that's something I think we need to go ahead and have in the future shows, evaluate their time. Maybe we'll wait a year during their first year on Netflix to see how it's turned out, but that's something we want to go ahead and touch on. But before we head on out, my friend, I wanted to go ahead and get you a cheap plug for what's coming up on the PVD cast, my friend.
Well, what is coming up on the PVD cast is the current episode is a gentleman that has created actually kind of a curriculum, if you want to call it that, but it's a graphic novel with some interactive activities and an AR helmet for a project called Cutie Catchers. He is a doctor. Stephen Christian is his name. And he's trying to create this very immersive environment to make learning about health, you know, much more fun. I'm sure, Gerald, when you were in high school, you had to take a health class and all you did was do, like me, you know, here, do this worksheet. Do you share that experience?
I do. And I did. And I did many worksheets, and I'm trying to block that period of time out of my mind. But go ahead.
But think how awesome it'd be if it was in a comic book form, right?
Yes. Yes. That would be much more entertaining. Yes. But
well, anyways, Stephen is
my worksheets were just all do it and write it. Here's the lines and there you go. And yeah, get your pencils ready. Make sure they're sharpened.
And if you were like me, you were drawing a Mil Mascara's action figure over on the side of the paper.
There you go. Absolutely. And the fact that you probably should put on the side that Mil Mascara is not doing any bumps or jobs. You should put that right there as well.
I should. But anyways, so yeah, check out Steven's appearance on the PVD cast. It's up right now. And again, you can check out the PVD cast at pvdcast.com or all of those great social media, or excuse me, podcasting outlets. And you can also follow me on social media at PVDcast Threads, Facebook, Instagram. I still also have a Twitter. That's my personal Twitter handle at PVDMVP. And if you want to email me, johnorlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. And yeah, that's what's going on. And the schedule for Matt Talk has gotten a little bit wonky. Due to my partner being in and out of town for various different reasons. So we are hoping and we are getting ourselves set to go this Sunday with a new episode. So check that out over at YouTube, Matt Talk, MATTALK podcast. You can check it out through Facebook, Twitch, all those great outlets. So that was the worst plug I've done in a very long time.
it's just so many to remember. I get you, my friend. He's like, where are you here? It's like, you know, I go back and I see this like notification from a social media service. Oh, I didn't even know I actually had an account there. Oh, wow. That's it. Absolutely. But again, John, it's great to have you aboard, my friend, as my tag team partner. Tag team podcast champions of the world. That is, of course, John Orlando and me, Gerald Glassford. We want to thank you so much for watching and listening to the State of Pro Wrestling, of course, with the PVD cast, Matt Talk, and also right here at the Pop Culture Gospel. So for John Orlando, it's Gerald Glassford. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll be back for the State of Pro Wrestling at the end of August. Hopefully we will know and see a lot and here, but again, to all those that enjoy what we do, if you want to go ahead and like and subscribe, that's always great. 5 stars, even better. 5 stars. We like 5 stars in and out of the ring right here at the State of Pro Wrestling for the PVD cast, Matt Talk, and the Pop Culture Cosmos. Ding, ding, ding.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Gerald Glassford talking about the State of Pro Wrestling for July and August, which included some news about SummerSlam. Next week, we will have, of course, the Pro Wrestling Pundits return to give their 2 cents worth on what they thought was the good, the bad, and the ugly of SummerSlam. And I'd like to thank Gerald for the flexibility to kind of move this episode up a week so that we wouldn't have any lapse in coverage, if you will. So thanks again, Gerald, and it's probably about time for me to start wrapping things up. So let's start off with letting you know where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. Well, you can find me on Twitter. That's right, I'm still on Twitter. The personal Twitter handle is at PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Threads, and Instagram. At PVDcast is the handle there. And if you want to be old school and shoot me an email, you could do that as well. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this great show and where they can hear it. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get all of the new episodes. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets like Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, etc., etc. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting outlet or app, put into the search bar PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you're using one of those outlets or apps, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. It would mean a lot to me to help the show grow if you just take a few moments to write a review and to rate. And you know what? While you're at it, go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD Cast. And of course, every Wednesday night through the Facebook page at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can hear the episode as well for the week. So that's three different avenues for hearing this great show through, of course, PVDcast.com. Through your favorite podcasting app or outlet. And of course, Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page at PVDcast. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. You have no excuse for missing out on the show. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you for checking out the episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous. Stay independent, stay safe and healthy. Been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.